Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Chloe. Thank you for listening to our podcast series. We are conducting this podcast about the influential people in our life. Today, we are honored to have our very first interviewee, Mr. Vegliante. Mr. Vegliante is a lawyer for AT&T. He is also the father of one of our crew members, Jack. Okay, Mr. Vegliante, shall we begin?
Yes.
Let's begin with how your life was growing up and who influenced you. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Hamden, not too far from here.
Did you have a supportive family growing up?
Yes, my mom and dad were very supportive. My dad was ended up being the principal at the high school. He was a teacher in the school. And me and my mom were very supportive.
Who or what inspired you?
When I was younger, I always looked at, you know, people who were playing sports and things like that. And then as I got older, it started to become, you know, people I worked with. And then when I went to law school, you know, some of the people in law school changed the way I looked at things. And I think the biggest inspirations as an adult were people who I met really almost after college. As you get older and become an adult, I think the people who inspire you, it's different people who inspire you than what it is when you're growing up and you're younger.
Now let's talk about your college education. Where did you get your education?
I went to Hamden High and then Fairfield University.
And what was your major?
Political science.
Was your college a big help for you in order to become a lawyer?
I mean, you certainly couldn't do it without it. But before I went to law school, I left college and actually went and worked in New York for a few years, about almost 5 years, for the Chase Manhattan Bank. And it was while I was down there, I decided to try law school, that I wanted to go to law school. But so, but college was good because it was a liberal arts college. It tried to teach you a lot of different things as opposed to just one specific. Like, I had a minor in economics, but it tries to make you more well-rounded so that whatever you do later in life, you'll have those skills. That's why writing is so important, but so is STEM and all of that as well.
Well, excellent. So why did you choose your current profession?
I was working down in New York, and I liked it, and everything was going well, but I wasn't sure that's what I wanted to do in banking the rest of my life. And I thought about what I might want to do, and law seemed like the kind of area where there's a lot of things you could do with a law degree. I mean, you could become a lawyer, which is what happened. I always expected maybe to come back to Connecticut and be a lawyer in a small town, maybe along the water like an old Saybrook or something like that. I never expected to be at a big company like AT&T. For a while, I even thought about maybe going to law school out in Colorado, somewhere like that, because I used to like to ski, so I thought it'd be kind of fun to live out there. But I was seeing a woman pretty seriously, so I stayed around here. That's how I ended up at UConn.
Nice. So, how old were you when you got your job?
Well, I became a lawyer when I was 29, just before I turned 30, and then I've been a lawyer at 4 different places, and now I've been, I think it was 39 when I got the job at AT&T, and I've been there for about 16 years.
So, how did you find your occupation in the first place?
It's kind of trial and error. So, you know, I thought, well, I was working at the bank, and I liked it, but that was more of a management job. And then from there, I was trying to just decide what I'd want to do, and there were I knew some friends who were lawyers, and what they were doing interested me. I thought law was interesting. I hadn't really gone towards math or STEM, and I think back then there wasn't the same focus on STEM that there probably is now. I said, let me just one day, and none of my friends thought I would do it. They thought I was just, you know, talking. And then I went and took the LSAT. And I did pretty well in the LSAT, so I knew I could get into law school, and I'd been working in New York, so I had good experience, so I applied and I got in. Now, had I gone to a different law school like down in New York, who knows, I probably wouldn't have been in Connecticut.
Can you give us a description about your job?
My job's interesting and it's different. Most lawyers have clients who bring legal problems to them, and then you handle the legal problem for somebody who's not a lawyer, right? Like maybe some of your parents or whomever. Where I am, my job is to understand the law, and what I was just doing before I came here is looking up a case called Purple Communications that the National Labor Relations Board issued recently, and it talks about what a union can do on the employer's property. But sometimes I go to outside attorneys, and they are really the experts because they only look at that area of law, and my job is to know the business, how my clients operate, And what happens is the clients have something they need, but there's some laws that make it a little more difficult or prohibit them from doing that. Or they can do it, but they have to do it a very certain way if they're going to do it. And what my job is to kind of be like almost a bridge between the outside attorneys and the clients, and knowing what the company wants, what's best for the company, what the company's trying to do. So I could have lawyers who are, you know, brilliant guys. I mean, they're like geniuses. But because they don't know as well how the company works, they're not as good a position to really figure out under the law what's the best solution for the company. So that's sort of what a lawyer who works inside for a company has to do.
Do you enjoy your current job?
Yeah, for the most part I enjoy it. I like what I do, but the hours are too long. Like last night, I took a half a day because I had to go do something in the morning. And then so I was back at work by 12, and my last conference call probably ended at 8:30. So, you know, 8.5 hours, that was a half a day yesterday. Sometimes it's a little more than I want it to be. It takes away my ability to do other things that I'd like to do. But the work itself is pretty good.
Did your parents support your career of becoming a lawyer?
Yes and no. When I was a little kid, they always said, study hard so you can become a doctor or a lawyer. But they never really thought I was going to become a lawyer. And then I was living in New York for 5 years before I decided. So when I decided to become a lawyer, they had no idea about it. I ended up telling them. And they thought I got in school and that was good. So they were happy for me.
If you were given a chance to change your job, what would you choose?
If I had a chance to change my job, I don't know what I'd want to do, but I'd want it to be a job. And it's funny because I spoke to some of the kids in the high school last year, Sheehan and Lyman Hall together over at Sheehan, and that question came up. And I said, I'd want a job where I was my own boss in my own company. So it's a situation that I would rather have, but I don't know what that, you know, kind of job that would be necessarily.
That's great. Let's start talking about your personal life. What was the biggest obstacle in your life?
I was probably a pretty bad student.
What would you say is the biggest failure in your life? What did you take from it?
Not studying. To be honest with you, I mean, I never failed, but I wouldn't have been in the STEM class either. I wasn't a very good student. You know, it wasn't until later when I had to work harder to make up for that. And I was able to, but that's probably the biggest obstacle. I think knowing that made me work harder. So maybe it was also the biggest advantage.
What is your greatest strength?
All attorneys have different strengths. You know, some of them really are the type who sit in a library all the time. They're very studious. I sort of like people, get along with people. And I think when you're dealing with litigation and trials and arbitrations, knowing people, understanding people, being able to talk to people is a big asset. Someone said to me one time, you know, you warm up to the jury real quickly. Like, you just are comfortable in front of them. I think that's probably something that's helped me.
If you were given the opportunity to relive your life, would you? Why or why not? What would you do different?
If I had to do things over, and I know what I know now, if I knew then, you know, knowing what I know now, I would work harder, but then I would take more risks. I would maybe try to start my own company. I wouldn't ever worry about failing. If you can, you've got to worry enough to motivate yourself to do what you need to do. But beyond that, you shouldn't worry about anything. You should just do what you need to do and then move on. And that's, I think, the most successful people. You know, they don't want to fail, but they're not afraid to fail. And taking risks is also, I think people who are, like you guys are in, you know, STEP, so kind of have an advantage, obviously, all very smart, but that's not enough. You've got to work hard and sometimes lucky, just being lucky. I've got a friend who's done extremely well. He admits being lucky is a good thing. But taking risks is huge.
What advice would you give to someone trying to succeed in life?
Figure out what you want to do. Do what's necessary to get that accomplished. But don't think little, think big. Don't think, oh, if I just get this, that's good enough. You guys shouldn't be thinking that. You should be thinking, what might possibly happen? What's the best thing that could happen? Go for that. And then if it doesn't work, and it doesn't work for a lot of people, you'll find something good.
If you could change one thing in the world, what would it be?
I don't know, so many things, but I would want to stop all the violence and, you know, have have people be better to each other, and just like our politics now, stop all this stupid fighting. You know, try to find a middle ground.
Are you proud of all the choices you made in your career?
In my career, yeah. If we limit it to my career, sure.
What about in life?
No, and you know what? Like I said, don't take risks, make choices, you know, make better choices than others. Probably, if you never make a mistake, then your life was too easy, right? I used to say when I skied, if I skied all day long and I didn't fall once, I wasn't skiing hard enough. Same with your career, same with your life. If nothing goes wrong, it's too safe. You should be going out and trying to do stuff. Try to do something you don't think you can do. You've got nothing to lose.
Are there any other questions?
I have a question. I'll break the ice a little bit. You know, obviously when we emailed you, you travel a lot, but when you do travel, what has been the most difficult group of people, maybe in a certain state or a certain area in general? Like, you deal with people all the time. Like, there's different mentalities. I guess in Connecticut, we're a little more uptight about time, but if you go more south, everyone's a little laid back. I mean, in your experience for your travels, like, what has been the most, like, wow, this is crazy moment in your career?
Well, it's funny, because when you talk about traveling, I've only started traveling in the last year.
So
Okay. So, like, I went to Alaska, which is the first time I was ever in Alaska. And I go to Dallas sometimes. People are definitely different in different parts of the country. You go into New York, it's a whole lot different than going to Chicago or going to Dallas, going to Alaska. But when I was in law school, I was lucky because we had an opportunity to spend one semester in Europe. So I got a year rail pass, and I was older than I was in law school, so I was probably 27, 28, but I had a pretty good job in the summer. So it was probably the first time in my life where I really had a little bit of extra money. So we got the year rail pass, and I mean, we went everywhere. We went to Portugal, we went to France, we went to Bordeaux, we went to Spain, we went to Germany, Italy, Belgium, I mean, almost everywhere. What am I forgetting? Denmark. So the people are all different, right? So if you're in Germany or Holland, they're very much more reserved. You know, they're gonna walk up and slap you on the back and how you doing. As a matter of fact, the big bear fest that they have over there?
The Oktoberfest.
We went to the Oktoberfest right after the Berlin Wall came down. So it was those days with Reagan, and back then. It was right before the senior George Bush went into Iraq for the first time. So it was kind of neat. You're meeting people who are coming from Eastern Europe who were never allowed to leave their country before, are coming over, and it was hard to communicate with them. And then you go to Italy, and people are the opposite. They'll slap you on the shoulder, how you doing, put your arm around you, yeah, and all that. And I think that's kind of true even in America, that in some areas people are more relaxed and friendly and other areas are more reserved. But I think once you get by that, people are just people and they're all kind of the same. That's just sort of on the surface, and you shouldn't judge anybody too quickly.
Yeah.
Get to know them first.
True. I've been bouncing in and out of the class, but you know, knowing the fact that you represent AT&T, what has been the most bogus case you ever dealt with in your time with?
Can I say two?
Yeah, absolutely. Go for it.
The first one went all the way to the district court, the D.C. appellate court, which is one step below the Supreme Court of the United States. I almost argued it, actually. I wasn't admitted there, but my boss almost wanted me to argue it because during the preparation, we had the outside counsels. Those guys were like geniuses, and then there was us. But I knew the business so well, like I was saying, they almost had me argue it. And and I don't know, some of your parents are in the unions, and you know, I've got friends who are in the unions, and guys I went to high school with are in the unions, and guys who are friends with mine now. like Emma Duarte's dads, you know her. So I get along with people in the unions. But the unions decided that they were going to wear a shirt, and all the shirt said on it was inmate. It was just a T-shirt. It said nothing but inmate. And we said, you're not wearing that to anybody's house. You're not knocking on the door and saying, I want to come into your house with a shirt that says nothing but inmate.
As an AT&T technician or something like that?
Yeah, technician. So so somebody's waiting there, like an older couple or somebody with just little kids, sitting there waiting for somebody to come fix their phone, and you show up. And this, you know, was back around 2008, 2009. It was at the time when the Cheshire home invasion happened, and those guys were inmates. And we said, there is absolutely no way you wear a shirt on company time, in company work, that says inmate on it. They said, we're going to do it. We said, you do it. We're going to send you home. You're suspended. You're not going to get paid. They get suspended. They don't get paid. They go to the National Labor Relations Board has a region here in Hartford. They say, nope, they have a right to wear the shirt. We say, absolutely not. We go to an administrative law judge. Administrative law judge says, I think they had a right to wear a shirt. So that's ridiculous. We go to the National Labor Relations Board. They say, they knew the person from the technician was coming from the company. We think that they can wear it too. And we said, you've got to be kidding. So we went all the way. So you have to appeal that to the circuit court in either Second Circuit, which is in New York, or District of Columbia. We did it in District of Columbia. We went down, we argued it, and then we didn't even get the decision until we argued it in December 12th, 2012. So it was 12-12-12. And we got it. Was it last year or the year before? I think last year, 2014 or 15, last year. So we had to wait almost 3 years for it. And Judge Kavanaugh, who wrote it, was a Yale law student, so he used to live here in New Haven. And he wrote, sometimes common sense is the best way to decide a case. And here, common sense is pretty clear that a company does not have to let someone wear an inmate shirt into the home of one of their customers. And everybody, when I tell them that, they're like, you got to be kidding me. Why would they think you could wear a shirt that says that? And my view is, it's sometimes things don't work the way they should. And the one that'll gross you out is there was once a table like this, but bigger. All right, so the first one, the worst case ever, was what the what a United States government agency would actually do, which is absurd. The second one is what a person would do. So there was a person who, if I've got this right, he had a sick day. So you get 10 days for sick day a year. So he ran out of sick days. He gets his sick days on the date of the anniversary when we started with the company. So say it was July 5th. All of a sudden on July 6th, he's out. He's sick. So his manager said, yeah, sure, he's sick. He got his sick days yesterday, and then the next day he's sick. Calls somebody, say, come with me, another manager. They go down to the dock. The boat's coming in, and there he is walking off with the big cooler of beer and fish. And he looks at the guy and says, tomorrow morning, come see me after we do the dispatch in the morning. And dispatch is every morning they sit down at a big table and the supervisor gives out your checks. He gives you out your work assignments, whatever he's going to give you for the day. As he's doing that, this is gross, I'm telling you. This guy, I won't say his name, who's sitting there, normally sits way at the end of the table, like a kid who's at the back of the bus, a kid who stays away from the teacher. And all of a sudden, for some reason, he's sitting right next to the supervisor that day. And he stands up, he goes to leave, he sits back down. Stands up, goes to leave a second time, stops, and vomits all over the supervisor's head.
Oh.
All over him.
He probably had too many fish to eat.
Well, right. And then he leaves, and he goes into there's a utility, this is a garage, there's some offices, but it's a garage where all our trucks are. And he goes into the utility with the big deep sink, it's a garage type bathroom. And the guys who were there said the supervisor so much didn't know what to do, he kept giving out the checks. And then he stopped, and he takes his glasses off, because I could barely see through them, I think.
Ew.
Puts it down, and then he gets up, and then he goes to get washed off, and sure enough, the guy who he vomited on is there. And they have a fight.
Wow.
And now the question is, who started the fight and all of that? You don't know who started the fight, so nobody gets fired. You just can't really prove who started the fight. And my job as the attorney is to look at what they want to do, saying, make sure you're not discriminating, make sure you're not violating the law, make sure if it gets arbitrated, you have just cause under the collective bargaining agreement, but all these things we have to do before we can take action. And then years later, we found out that the guy who vomited did it on purpose, which I kind of knew he did. I don't know how you prove that. That's the only reason he loses his job. And what he did is somebody said, he said that he was going to go, he won't have breakfast, he'll go to Dunkin' Donuts, order two large coffees, the huge ones, drink them both, and if he does that, he'll be able to get sick. So because he knew the supervisor was going to discipline him for skipping a day of work when he should have been working, and you know, they got paid for it, so you get paid to go fishing. He threw up on a supervisor, which is probably one of the dumbest things I've ever seen an adult do. So those are the two that come to mind.
Cool. Any other questions? No?
Thank you, Mr. Vegliante, for taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk to us. And we'd like to thank our listeners for tuning in. Thanks again. Have a great day.
Thank you.